Unfortunately, everyone else is late, and we can't
wait that long because we've got stuff we need to finish, so they can catch up.
And not the delicious red stuff that you use with french fries.
Okay. Seven different departments in the trial courts. As I said last class, the emphasis here is trial. These are not the appeal. The appeals are not trials. Those are more like hearings. In the trials, this is again where you have judge, jury, evidence, witnesses, etc. The highest, bless you, trial court is the Superior Court. Superior Court handles the most complex cases. And as we said last class, they do criminal cases, they do civil cases, and they do cases in equity. Below them is the District Court. The District Court handles the same three types of cases, only less significant, less severe. Sometimes the District Court is referred to as the People's Court. Because yes, it hears civil, it hears criminal, but it also hears small claims. If you're going to go into court, chances are this is going to be the division that you're going to go to. So what do we mean? Well, if you're going to be convicted of a punishment where sentencing involves less than 5 years, you'll have your trial in the District Court. Or if you're going to sue somebody for less than $35,000, it's going to be in the District Court. The District Court also is the largest. Because it has the least significant trials, it often has the most trials. So in the District Court level, there are 150 judges. There are 2,400 clerk magistrates. That's where the chief probation officer works, and the probation officers, and a support staff. And in total, there are 69, actually technically 70, but 69 divisions of the District Court across the Commonwealth. Now, by law, there has to be at least a District Court in each of the 14 counties. But the more populous or the geographic speaking, larger counties often have multiple divisions. Why? Again, the goal of our court system is to make it accessible as possible. So, for example, in Worcester County, there are a total of 11 divisions of the Worcester County District Court Department. And if you've ever driven around Worcester County, you might have driven by little courthouses. Yes, we have the big courthouse in Worcester. That's true. But there are smaller divisions. So if you live in Worcester, Auburn, Barry, Holden, Millbury, Paxton, Princeton, Oakham, Rutland, West Boylston, you would go to the Worcester Courthouse. But me, down in Sutton, I have to go to the Uxbridge Courthouse. Because Uxbridge handles cases from Blackstone, Douglas, Millville, Northbridge, and Uxbridge, as well as Sutton. There's a courthouse up in Leominster. There's a courthouse in Milford. There's a courthouse down in Dudley. You know, they're all spread out and they have their area that they encompass. Again, why? Again, just to make it easier for the individuals that have to go to court. Make it so you don't have to travel to Boston. And for those of you who came in, as we mentioned, District Court, they handle the same cases, only less significant, less severe. All right, interestingly enough, the third department of the trial courts is the Boston Municipal Court. Boston's court is so big in terms of cases that are filed, it has its own separate department. But this municipal court operates under the same rules as all of the other district courts. Why? Well, very simple. The Boston Municipal Court handles the Back Bay, Beacon Hill, South End, North End, and the waterfront, plus Suffolk County. On any given year, there are between 20 and 25,000 cases filed in the Boston Municipal Court. Everything from criminal complaints to civil suits, to contract disputes, to landlord-tenant complaints. All gets filed into that one building, so it gets its own department. The fourth trial court is the land court department. Land court department. The land court is a court of limited jurisdiction, meaning it's specialized. It doesn't handle criminal cases. It doesn't handle civil cases. Guess what type of cases the land court deals with?
Land.
Any dispute in land. Yeah, exactly. Why? Well, there are very complex and particular rules in terms of owning land. It's not just a matter of you saying it's my land. No, no, no. You have to have title. You literally have to have a piece of paper that says you own it. And that piece of paper must be perfect. Meaning it must show what they refer to as is the meets and bounds of the property. A verbal or word description of your parcel of property. And you must be able to trace that parcel back to its original owner, however far back that goes. The reason being is if at any point there was a flawed title, by law that doesn't mean you fully own your land. Because you're only allowed to sell what you legally own. And if the person selling it to you didn't actually own it, you don't own it either. There are also disputes in the land court that deal with boundaries. So it's not just ownership, but boundaries of lands. I've had the ability to read some titles, and one of the descriptions in a parcel that I was helping somebody with said, yeah, we walked 15 feet from the old oak tree, heading towards the sun, in the direction of Jones's barn. Well, there was no oak tree left on the parcel. There was no barn. So how do you figure out exactly what that line is? It gets really, really complicated. Now, interestingly enough, you have the ability to access all that information because it's all held within the Registry of Deeds. And by the way, there are Registry of Deeds in every single county. And just like with the district court, some of the counties are subdivided. So for instance, if you live in much of southern Worcester County, you're going to go to the Worcester County Registry of Deeds, which is located in what was once called the Galleria Mall. But it's in a building across the street from the Worcester Common. But if you are up in Fitchburg or Leominster or Gardner, you're going to go to the Fitchburg office of the Worcester County Registry of Deeds. But you can do a deed search, and you can see, for if you're looking for mom and dad's house, you can see exactly when mom and dad bought it from, who they bought it for. And if you trace that back, you could actually go all the way back to the original owner. Although I think currently, I think the online access, I think it only goes back 150 years. They're trying to get it all the way back because the old books of paper documents, you know, paper is big to store and it can get easily destroyed. So they are making an effort to digitize it. So at some point, like Sutton was chartered in 1703, you know, at some point, theoretically, I'll be able to go all the way back to when the town was chartered and figure out, okay, who owned the parcel of land that my house sits on, originally. And I've already described how land registration works. All right, any questions? All right, moving on. Trial court number 5. Another court of limited jurisdiction, called the housing court. Guess what type of matters the housing court deals with? This is where you go if you have landlord disputes. These are specialized courts because what they deal with is they apply local municipal regulations to housing circumstances. So, for instance, town has an ordinance that requires inspections of senior housing. Well, the inspection comes through and they discovered there's potential of mold. But the owner of the complex claims, no, we've already hired someone and we abated it. Well, where is that dispute going to be dealt with? Well, it will go to the housing court. Or if you claim your landlord's a slumlord, you know, not fixing the heating, or they're trying to evict you, you go to the housing court. Now, if it goes beyond simple human habitation and it goes into potential criminal allegations, a trial can begin in the housing court and then they could shift it over to either the district or the superior court. Because sometimes tenants are assholes. And sometimes landlords are assholes. So the little disputes blow up more than just, you know, someone's not cleaning the property. But FYI, if any of you are thinking about becoming landlords, just like Massachusetts is a female-friendly state, Massachusetts is also a tenant-friendly state. I know a whole bunch of people that once owned property, and they got rid of it. Because like during the COVID, people didn't have to pay rent, you couldn't evict anybody. They changed the rules. You couldn't go in and inspect your property without basically getting a warrant. And then even if you do file for an eviction, it could take up to like 90 days, which gives the tenants plenty of time to trash the units. So it's not, the law is like a pendulum. The ideal legal situation is you want it to be balanced. But in Massachusetts, again, we're a liberal progressive state. So those type of activists kind of put the fingers on the scale and at least real life consequences. So just be warned, before you think you can become a mega millionaire being a slumlord, just be warned. Massachusetts isn't that easy to deal with. All right, the sixth trial court. In Massachusetts, we actually have two courts combined. We have probate and family combined into a single department. Probate is one of the most specialized courts in Massachusetts, and as we know, it goes back to the foundation of our colony. We talked about probate last class. It's referenced in there. Probate, of course, deals with your stuff when you die. Well, family court deals with family matters. Marriage, divorce, adoption, child support, alimony. All of those items go through the family court. Anything that's going to impact you and your loved ones, you're going to go into this department. Now, of course, we talked about probate. Probating means you're going to verify the will and you're going to make sure that the deceased's needs are handled properly. We talked about that. But keep in mind, if there is a significant dispute over the distribution wishes in a will, this also could end up in district or superior court. It just depends. And again, I hate to say it, and I said it last class, and I'm going to repeat it because it bears remembering. Money and free stuff makes families go cuckoo. I've seen so many families shattered when grandma died, or mom and dad died, and the kids are like vultures fighting over what remains. So the best advice I can give you, if you have siblings, have lots of conversations. Lots of conversations. Because when mom or dad are dead, they're not going to be able to stop the infighting. So just to give you an example, Mrs. Professor Lemanic, she only has a sister. So they've been talking about, you know, what's going to happen, you know, when both mom and dad die. Pretty much they've decided that neither really of them want the house, so they're going to sell it. But because financially we are in a better position than my sister-in-law, who got divorced, we're probably going to give the bulk of the sale of the house to her to help her out. I think we're probably going to do like a 65-35 split. You know, so we're talking about it now. Because it's important. And by the way, dealing with a loved one, when they pass, it's one of the hardest things to deal with. Particularly if you are named the executor. You're the one in charge of giving out all the stuff. All right, as far as family matters go, again, I already flew through it. Divorce, annulment, adoption, etc. One of the greatest days, and I was able to attend, because for a while I was a member of the Lions Club, and we got contacted by the registrar of probate and family court, and she asked us if we could go and buy bears, little stuffed bears, stuffed animals, teddy bears. And we did, and then we brought them up to the court because on one day there were like 15 kids that were all getting adopted. And it was just so cool because a lot of these kids had been in homes, you know, and they've been being pushed around, you know, the juvenile system. And just seeing just the happiness between the adopting parents and the newly adopted children, it was just a beautiful thing. But in order to verify that the parents are clean, no records, no issues, that's going to be handled by, you know, the probate and family court. The last and the seventh trial court division is the juvenile court department. Again, another court of limited jurisdiction. Guess what types of cases the juvie court deals with? Anything involving children. Cases of child delinquency. What's called CHINs. Children in need of services. Care, protection. If a child is a criminal, in Massachusetts, they cannot be charged as an adult until they are at least 16. So if a child commits a crime, they are going to be handled by the juvie court system. The juvie court system also oversees the juvenile prisons. They also provide counseling, because Massachusetts believes that if a child does something wrong, that doesn't mean they're going to be a lifelong criminal. So a lot of effort is put in the juvenile court system to engage in rehabilitation. So what do they get? Well, they get psychiatric care. They get psychological assistance. They get counseling. And they also provide support services, not only for the kid, but for the parents. I had a buddy, I don't really talk to him anymore, a few years ago, and his kid just went completely off the rails. Just started doing drugs, started getting into all kinds of bad, bad things. Not fully initiated in a gang, but he was kind of like on the periphery of gang activity, theft, crime, kept getting busted, getting in fights. And the hardest thing that my buddy had to deal with, well, my buddy at the time, was he basically had to turn his kid over to the courts. He wanted his kid in prison because he was just afraid the kid's so off the rails that at some point he's going to kill somebody. Hard, hard stuff. All right. Those are the seven trial court divisions. Again, in all these scenarios, judge, jury, witnesses, evidence, testimony, it all takes place. Questions? All right. What happens if you get sentenced? Well, you would fall within the jurisdiction of the Commissioner of Probation. The job of the Commissioner of Probation is to maintain the central files for the whole Commonwealth of everybody who has a criminal record. And the job of the Commission is to ensure that there is proper supervision of these individuals. Now, the Commissioner of Probation handles both aspects, aspects of legal punishment. He oversees probation, which is technically part of the court systems. What's probation? Does anyone know what probation is? Probation is when the court punishes you, but you don't go to jail. So they're going to require you to be under the supervision of the courts, monitor your behavior for a certain time period. That is different than parole. Parole is what you get when you were in jail and you are released before your term is up. But in terms of practical operation, parole operates the same as probation. If you go out on parole, you have to basically check in. Your behavior is monitored for a certain period of time. Usually the remainder of your sentence. Do not confuse the terms. Neither probation nor parole are pardons. A pardon is granted by the governor with the advice of the council. Pardon is when you are forgiven. If you receive probation, if you receive parole, you are not forgiven. But if you get probation, it just means you're not going to jail. And if you get parole, this means you were in jail and you're being released a little early. Just FYI. Now, what's involved in parole? Well, any person who is in jail. Any person who is in jail. Unless they are sentenced to life. And even in some instances where you're sentenced to life, you have the ability to apply for parole. Early release. So you don't serve out your term. Your sentence. But the catch is, you have to apply to the parole board. The parole board will review why you are in jail to begin with and what has been your prison record. So, if you go to jail and you are a good little doobie, you behave, you're cooperative, you don't get in any fights, you volunteer. FYI, the Worcester County prisons, they have a huge work program where the prisoners who are behaved have the ability to get out of their jail cells. They have a huge farm that the prisoners go work. And they also go out on work details. They basically engage in community service. So they'll go to the different towns and they'll help out with work projects. We've had prisoners in Sutton on many occasions. They've helped scrape town hall. Because we got a wooden town hall, so it's gonna get painted every few years. They went to Waters Farm. And they did some volunteer work up there. They went and helped clean up the baseball fields one year. And I tell you, it's very interesting when you drive up to one of these places and you see a group of men in orange jumpsuits and two guys with shotguns. But, because I'm a selectman, if ever they know they're in town, I will go and engage with them. I talk to the guys and I thank them. And you know, the funny thing is, many of them, they'll just admit, I just did something dumb. I wasn't thinking. I got caught. And you know, now I'm paying my penance. I'm doing what I need to do. Well, those are the guys who have the opportunity to get paroled. So if they get sentenced to 7 years and they get early release, they may get parole for the last 2 years. And what do they have to do? Well, if the board grants them parole, they are assigned a parole officer. And the parolee, the person who is on parole, has to check in Sometimes it's once a week. Sometimes it's multiple times a week. Sometimes it's a phone call. Sometimes they have to go to the parole officer's office. Sometimes the parole officer comes to their house and meets with them. It really just depends upon the circumstances. Now, here's the catch. If the parolee commits another crime or breaks the restrictions put on them, they don't go to court. They get basically arrested and they return to prison. And they'll have to serve out the rest of their sentence behind bars. So basically, they have to engage on their best behavior. Probation, on the other hand, is a determination that's granted by the judge. If the judge feels it's not necessary to confine somebody in our prisons, they will sentence them to X amount of months, X amount of years of probation. But for how long and what they need to do, that's determined by the judge. Judge has discretion. Now, here's the funny thing. Just like a parolee who breaches the terms of their parole, if you are on probation and you breach the terms of your probation, you get arrested and you get brought to a jail for incarceration of the rest of your sentence. So, in neither instance do you go again before a judge. Nope. It's like Monopoly. If you get a go-to-jail card, you're not allowed to go past go, you're not allowed to collect the $200, you go right to jail. And just like there's a parole officer, there are a bunch of guys that work in the courthouses that oversee the probation process. The only distinction is that there are designated probation officers for adults and designated probation officers for kids, juveniles. They receive separate trainings. Questions? All right, seeing none. Next up is the staff. Because obviously in the courthouses, it's not just the judge. There's a whole bunch of people that work in the courthouses. And if you ever go into the courthouses, you know what I'm talking about. There are many, dozens, hundreds of staff and clerical positions. Some people are in charge of data entry. Some people are assigned to work at the counters. Some people are there to point people in the right direction. There's custodians. Every single building has a crew working in it. And their job is to basically make the building run. Every single court has a primary officer called a clerk. The clerks are the principal administrative officer for the court, and they work directly with the judges. There are clerks in every single county. And they work with whatever court system, court division, is in operation in that building. So if during the day in the Worcester County Courthouse, downtown Worcester, there, like I said, there could simultaneously be two superior court hearings, there could be a district court hearing, there could be a land court hearing and a probation hearing. Well, the job of the clerk is to make sure that the judges for all of those different courts and trials have everything they need and that all of the information is filed properly. Of course, there are assistant clerks that help the primary clerk do those duties.
There you go. Oh, I thought assistant courts were going to come up next, but I guess not.
In each county, there are two elected positions.
And I think only one is going to come up, if I look at my notes correctly.
The Registrar of Deeds, person who handles the registry deeds, that's an elective office, as is the Registrar of Probate. These are elective offices, and the elected official basically administers operations within those divisions. In Massachusetts, the register positions, they are partisan. So you will see the candidate, if they're a Democrat or they're a Republican, and they serve six-year terms. So the current registrar for the Worcester County probate court, Stephanie Fatman, she's up for re-election this year. And her husband is my senator, Ryan Fatman.
I don't know if she has a competitor, but those races usually are competitive. Because if you can land that, you get a six-figure salary for 6 years. And you really don't have to do much of the mundane stuff because that's what the staff in the court handles. So you're kind of like a figurehead. And interestingly enough, you don't even have to be lawyers to win the office. So when Stephanie won her first term, she hadn't finished law school yet. She was going to law school, but she hadn't finished and she hadn't set for the bar because there's no requirement.
This should be under clerks. I don't know why I put the order in as I did, but
as I said, every single clerk has assistant clerks that technically sit above the staff, but essentially make sure that everything is properly recorded.
Each county has an elected sheriff. The current sheriff for Worcester County is Lou Evangelitis. Sheriff elections are partisan. Sheriff Lou is a Republican. But I've never talked to anybody, Democrat, Republican, Independent, that did not like Sheriff Lou. He's not a partisan. He's tall, he's like 6'5", and he is just a good guy. You know how you meet some of those people sometimes? They're just human beings that are just decent. He's a good guy. The sheriff's job is to oversee the prisons. But our sheriffs do not have police powers. So in other states, there are elected sheriffs, but they are like the chiefs of police. That is not the case with sheriffs in Massachusetts. The sheriff oversees the prisons, and the sheriff's department oversees the transportation of criminals from the court to the prison. So every now and then you'll see the Worcester County Sheriff's Department uses black vans, but they got big gold stars on them. And every now and then you'll see one of the Worcester County Sheriff vans leaving the city.
and there's people in the back. And what I always say to myself when I see that is, oh, they're in trouble. They're going to jail.
All right. Also working in our courts are what in Massachusetts are called court officers. Although other states refer to them as bailiffs. So if you ever go into a courthouse, the first thing you see is a metal detector. And there's guys or gals in uniforms with guns. Those are court officers, and their job is to provide security for the court building. There will also be a court officer or two in every single courtroom where there is a trial. And if there's a criminal in there who's violent, they may bring in more. Because every now and then on the news, you'll see someone who's in a trial and they lose their mind and they get physical. And the court officers kind of like descend upon him like a rugby scrum. There's a lot of people that become criminal justice majors that either look to work for the prison system or become court officers. Because it doesn't require you to get in a patrol car and be out on the beat. And of course, we have the state and county attorneys general. Massachusetts, we elect the Attorney General, whose primary job is to represent the Commonwealth of Massachusetts in all criminal matters. But one person cannot be the lawyer in all the cases. So every single county elects a district attorney. And their job is to be the lawyer for the Commonwealth on a county basis. These are partisan races. You vote for the Democrat or the Republican. But, truth be told, the district attorneys have hired professional assistant district attorneys that do most of the lawyering. Now, there are a lot of people that go to law school and they want to kind of break into the legal profession. So they usually end up seeing if they can get a gig working as an assistant district attorney. It's a good way to cut your teeth. Stressful. A lot of work. And the pay, that's not too bad. I think if you get a job as an assistant DA in Worcester County, I think starting pay is like $85,000 a year. It's not too bad. Granted, not what you can make if you hang your own shingle, but when you start your own law firm, you start off with this much money coming in. So at least if you can get hired and do a job, at least you can get a paycheck. So a lot of people, they start off working as an assistant DA, then they go work for a private law firm. Just FYI, if any of you are thinking of going to law school. And the last officers that work for the judicial system are the medical examiners. People die. And if someone dies, the state has, working for the court system, professional examiners that come out and take a look at the body and try to determine the precise cause of death. Because if it was a natural death, died of natural causes, no pun intended, but case closed. But if the person died under suspicious circumstances, there could be a crime afoot. Murder, manslaughter, etc. So they're going to come and they're going to examine the body to try to determine the cause. But you are not legally dead until a medical examiner declares you to be dead. And of course, the deaths are then recorded, and eventually the file gets its way all the way down to your local town hall or city hall. Questions on that? Almost done. Another part of our judiciary is the judicial council. The judicial council, in theory, are tasked with, I don't want to say overseeing necessarily the court system, because oversight is still handled by the legislature. But what this council is made up of are six judges or former judges. And their job is to review how the courts operate. So, is the system working as it's supposed to? Are there problems? If there are problems, they're the ones who make the initial reports and make suggestions for potential reform. Typically, the general court will defer to opinions made by the judicial council. Because after all, these were the men and women who once worked in the courts. They know how they're supposed to operate, at least in theory. So if the judicial council says there's a problem, usually the general court jumps. One of the current big issues is in the public defender's office. There's a lot of lawyers, that try to fill up their caseload by agreeing to serve as a public defender. So, part of Miranda, you know, if you can't afford an attorney, one will be appointed to you. Those are the men and women that you would get appointed, judges that go in there. But judges who volunteer to, well, they don't really volunteer, it's not free, but basically are willing to work in the public defender's office. Massachusetts lawyers get paid the lowest, the least amount out of any state in the country. Public defenders are only making, I think it's like $45 or $50 an hour. So the general court has refused to increase the pay. Heck, Maine, if you're an attorney in Maine, I think the public defender's office gets paid like $85 an hour. Well, just FYI, I know $50 sounds like a lot of money. You have no idea how much effort goes into having to present a case. Because if you are not fully prepared for trial, you could lose your law license. So your whole career is literally at stake anytime you go into the courtroom. And because the pay is so low, there is an all-time low in people willing to work for the public defender's office. I would never do it. I'd lose money. Why do I want to lose money? Go help somebody out. Sorry. I'm not in the business to help people out. I'm in the business to make money. That's the truth of the matter. Lawyers aren't around to help people. Lawyers are in there to make money, just like any other profession. So because the pay is so low, because there are an all-time low of people volunteering, there are people who have been arrested that are being released without a trial. Because in Massachusetts law, you are required to have a speedy trial. And if you cannot appear before a judge within, I think, 60 days, they set you free. So I'm not saying this to scare you, but this is the truth. On any given day, there is anywhere between 50 and 100 people who have been arrested that committed violent crimes, assaults, batteries, rapes, that are being let go because there's not enough attorneys to have them have their trial. Scary. And our general court, our legislature, seems to be unwilling to do anything about it. So if it seems like you hear about more criminal activity going on, that's probably a good reason why. Police arrest them, and then the courts let them out the back door. Crazy stuff. All right, the last major area, actually second to last major area, is another aspect of our judiciary, jury duty. Dum, dum, dum. Both the Constitution of the Commonwealth and the United States Constitution grants to everyone accused of committing a crime a right to a trial by jury. Anyone accused by the government of committing a crime has a constitutional right to a trial by jury. Not the same if it's a civil trial. If you're going to sue somebody for money, you have to request it. So if it's a criminal trial, you have a right to a jury. If you're going to sue someone for money, you have to request to have a trial before a jury. And by the way, request is easy. You check a box when you file your complaint. It's not that hard. But sometimes if there's a civil complaint, people don't want juries. So they'll have what's called a bench trial, where it's just before a judge. A lot of instances where there's claims of sexual assault, you know, very frequently there's sometimes you have the criminal aspect, but then people turn around and sue the person who might have sexually assaulted you. Those are typically behind closed doors, because both for the victim, well, primarily the victim, you know, they don't want their name in the newspaper. I don't think any of us would want to say, oh yeah, hi, my name's Jesse Lemanic and I was raped, you know, like in the newspaper. We wouldn't want that. So by default, you can request to have a bench trial. All right. Now, who can serve on the jury duty? Very simple. If you're qualified to vote, you can be a juror. And in Massachusetts, when you register to vote, your name is automatically put into the registry of potential jurors. And you could be called to serve once every 3 years. And you could serve on a jury in any of the different trials. You could serve on a jury in a housing court. You could serve on a jury in a district court. You could serve on a jury of a superior court case. Because when you get summons to go to jury duty, they keep you in the jury pool, which is an isolated room. And then the court figures out what trials are going on and which ones need juries. From there, they pick. Why? Well, going all the way back to the English common law system, the English, actually, it predates the English. It actually goes back to the ancient Greeks and Romans. They felt it is not right for the government to punish somebody unless the decision of guilt or innocence is made by the people. People of the community. Serving on the jury is hard because you're supposed to be unbiased. You are supposed to be neutral. You are supposed to sit there and listen to both sides to hear the evidence. And then when you hear the evidence, you're supposed to weigh what you heard against the law. That is so hard. Because most people, when they hear something, they weigh it against their own emotions, or their own values, or their own beliefs. We are all human, after all. And it's a very human thing to do. We have our likes, we have our dislikes, we have our internal biases. For instance, if you ever attempt to feed me something that has a banana in it, I will never like you ever. Because I absolutely despise bananas. So I'll admit it. I discriminate against people who try feeding me bananas. That includes one of my aunts. I remember as a kid, I was like 6 or 7 years old. I told her, I'm like, Auntie, I don't like bananas. Why are you doing this to me? She tried slipping it into a peanut butter and fluff sandwich. She tried putting a little piece in there. I pick it up. I could smell it. I knew something was wrong, not right. But I took a bite of it. And lo and behold, I could taste it. And I told her, Auntie, I don't love you anymore. And you know something? I never liked the woman for the rest of my life. I am that person. Why? We're all like that. And don't tell me you are not. There are people you do not like because of something they did. Or you think that they did. Because you make a judgment. Well, if you sit in the jury, you're not allowed to do that. You have to separate what you feel. And you have to apply it to the law. It's not easy to do. Now, if you are on a criminal jury, there are usually 12 jury members. If it's a district trial, there may be 6. If you're in Superior Court, there's going to be 12. If it's a criminal case, the jury must be unanimous. So if the jury thinks that the person is guilty, did what it is they are accused, because enough evidence was presented beyond a reasonable doubt, you have to convince all 12 people. If all 12 people don't agree, you end up with what's called a hung jury. The person is not convicted, but the person is not acquitted either. The court has a right to file for a retrial. So think Karen Reed. That was one of the most biggest, widely listened to case in Massachusetts in the last few years. I'm sure you're all aware of Karen Reed and what happened there. Well, she went through the whole first trial, and there was a hung jury. I think 3 or 4 of the jurors didn't believe what it is the state was accusing her of. So because they could not come to an agreement, there had to be a new trial. So think about it. That means all of the taxpayer money that went into the first trial now had to be duplicated times 2. But the system was designed that way. Because you don't want to have someone go to jail, potentially for the rest of their life, if you can't convince 12 people, beyond a reasonable doubt, that they did it. Now, on the flip side, if the government screws it up so bad, you could get an acquittal. By the way, the jury sentence you as being guilty. They do not sentence you as being not guilty. That's just what pop culture refers it to as. If the state can't prove its case, that doesn't mean you are innocent. That just means the state could not present its case. So in that instance, a jury would acquit the person. So O.J. Simpson was acquitted. He wasn't found innocent. But we also have another type, not just a trial jury, but we have another type of jury. And I actually have a friend that's on the grand jury now. Grand jury is completely different. In Massachusetts, unless you get called to serve on a superior court trial, Massachusetts has a one-day jury system. So if you're on a district trial or if you're on a housing court trial, the goal is to get the case done in a day. If you get called to grand jury, you are expected to serve for 3 months. Now, this does not mean that you're always in the courtroom. No. For that three-month period, you are on call. Because what the grand jury does is the grand jury provides a pre-hearing. The state comes in and presents the evidence that they have against the accused. And if the grand jury believes there's enough evidence there, then you can commence with a trial. Grand juries are summoned if there's a major crime, first degree murder. So what do they do? Well, the prosecution goes in there, usually the district attorney or the assistant district attorney, and they lay out all the evidence they use to be the basis of the arrest warrant. If 13 out of 23, grand juries made up of 23 people, if 13 out of the 23 thinks there's enough there for probable cause, doesn't mean that the jury, grand jury thinks they're guilty. Doesn't mean that they think they should be punished. No. All they're doing is reviewing, is there enough evidence there to warrant the arrest? Because if there's enough evidence there to warrant the arrest, then there's enough evidence to have a trial. Because, by the way, this should be no surprise to any of you, human beings do make mistakes. And every now and then, the police get the wrong person. So, the grand jury system is supposed to be a way to prevent a wasteful trial if you don't even have the right person. Or, the government doesn't have enough. I mean, if you are going to be accused of committing murder, the government not only has to prove the actus reus, the criminal act, you know, that, okay, Joe stabbed Steve. But in order to be convicted of murder, they have to also be able to prove intent. Well, what happens if Steve stabbed Joe, or however, Joe stabbed Steve, I don't remember who stabbed, was the stabber or the stabbee, what happens if the person who stabbed the other person did it because they worked in a kitchen and they were cutting up meat and the other guy came up behind him and scared him? So he turned around and accidentally stabbed him in the chest and killed him. Well, that's not a murder. That might be manslaughter because there's no intent. Well, if you don't have evidence of showing that it was an intentional act, you're not going to get a conviction. So you're just going to waste everyone's time. So that determination will be made by the grand jury. All right, so as I said, talked about that. Computers are used to pull the jury, pull the jurors on any given day. No one is exempt. If you you can't hide from jury duty, doesn't mean you'll get called once every 3 years. But if you get called, you have to go. Unless, of course, you put in for an exemption. So, for instance, my son was given jury duty. He got his card in the mail literally 3 days before he went down to Norfolk because he's active in the Navy. So he had been home. He was inactive for a few months. And then he reactivated himself. So his jury duty was smack dab in the middle of his deployment. So he called the court and said, hey, look, I'm going to be in the Navy and I'm not going to be here. So they basically canceled this time around. So now he may get summonsed again 3 years down the road, but You do have the ability to get out of it. And how could you get out of jury duty? If you're a student and you have to be in class, you can actually file for an exemption or a postponement. If you have a doctor's appointment, if you're going to be on vacation, things like that. So it's not saying that if you get it, you actually have to go on the day. No, you can get an extension. But at some point, you will have to serve so long as you live in Massachusetts. All right, I've already said the one day, one duration. And that's pretty much it. Have any questions? All right, I would like to start it, but I'm not going to start something with 3 minutes left. We got one more unit left to deal with for our stuff for the third exam. That's the bureaucracy. I'm going to try to get through it on Tuesday and Thursday, see if I get through it in 2 days, which means chances are exam number 3 will be next weekend. And then after we can get through exam number 3, we got the final. The final is not a comprehensive exam. I said that on day one. It's not a cumulative exam. The final is simply the fourth exam. The other thing that you have to be aware of is the due date for the paper is creeping up. I don't remember if it's the last week in April or the first week in May, but the paper counts as 20% of your grade. So if you haven't started working on that, get that done. And remember, I think everybody just about gave me their topics. It has to be something that's related to state or local government. So if you don't remember what it is that you said you were going to do or you want to change your topic, just let me know. But if your topic was approved, get it done. If you have time, get it done. It shouldn't take you that long to write it. It's an easy assignment. But make sure you follow the directions. All right. All right. Well, in that case, dismissed.